Today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares tackles a tricky passage.
You want me to use money to make friends so that I'll see them in heaven? I'm not saying that. That's what Jesus says right here. Make friends for yourself by means of unrighteous wealth so that when it fails, and it will, and it won't matter anymore 10,000 years from now, but those people will matter and they'll either be in heaven or they'll be in hell. So do what you can with those resources called money. Why? Because it matters so much to them, and it's amazing what money will do to build a bridge with people.
In Luke 16, Jesus tells a surprising and often misunderstood parable about a dishonest manager who cooks his master's books, cheating him out of wealth, and later is commended for his shrewdness. And then, even more shocking, Jesus tells his disciples to be like that dishonest manager. Well, obviously there's more to this parable than meets the eye. So let's get in and unpack it. Here's Pastor Mike Fabares with today's Focal Point and a message from our series called Money Matters.
Jesus takes this story about a master who'd just been ripped off by a dishonest manager and says, "Oh, look at you. How shrewd and clever you are." And Jesus says, now listen, let's learn from that. And now he applies it to his disciples. He says, for the sons of this world, now hopefully that's not you. You're a child of God, not a son of this world. So he's saying, look at how all the non-Christians out there, in this story in particular, are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the sons of light. They're giving more thought to how to get their objectives accomplished, which are in this case, nefarious, sinful, criminal, underhanded, dishonest, and unrighteous. Look how hard and thoughtful and tactical they are in trying to do their sinful thing than you guys sitting around, you're not giving it any thought compared to those people. Now here's Jesus applying a dishonest manager and saying, can't you be more like that? Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's why people have struggled with this. He gets even more specific. Verse number 9, he says, now let me just apply it for you. I tell you, who's he talking to? Verse 1, his disciples. Make friends for yourself, just like this guy made friends for himself, by means of unrighteous wealth. Now here's what he's saying. A little distance between you and that thing that you're going to use to make these friends. In other words, you recognize they are dealing with it differently and valuing it differently than you are. But you make friends, you build bridges with that unrighteous wealth so that when it fails, they, these friends that you've made, can receive you into the eternal dwellings. Now, here is Jesus applying very specifically the commendation of a man who becomes an illustration about the fact that they're more thoughtful, more strategic, more tactical, they're more shrewd in their sinful endeavors than you are in your righteous endeavors. And that was to be a rebuke. I mean, he just kicked us in the shins with that one. Hey, you Christians, you're not thoughtful about your Christian life. You're not strategic about your Christian lives. But it's put in a context and learned from a context that was never intended for you to mimic. And so it is in this passage. Don't mimic the unrighteousness of a man who's breaking rules and ripping people off. But obviously, what Jesus is trying to say is the key word here is shrewdness. Shrewdness has to do with being tactical, thoughtful, planning, endeavoring with my mind in a way that helps me accomplish a long-term goal with some strategic short-term steps. It's trying to get you to think eternally, that the decisions that you make need to be properly crafted by a thoughtful eternal plan, and you're making steps right now to benefit something in eternity. Number one, you and I, we need to live strategically for eternity. You need to live strategically for eternity. For what? For personal gain? No. Actually, for selfless gain. Now, I want you to think about this. You are a steward. You've been entrusted things for what purpose? Well, let's just think of the most fundamental purpose of the Christian life, which is being spelled out here. And that is that you're called to glorify God in one of the most primary assignments that you have. And that is found in Matthew 28. It is the Great Commission. It's called basically in just a simple phrase, make disciples. That's it. At the end of your life, God is going to say, wherever you worked, whatever you did, however you lived your life, whatever corner of the world you lived in, whatever your title was, whatever your business card said, did you utilize what I gave you to make disciples? Now we're going to look at one piece of the pie of what he gave you, and that is some money. It's you looking at that money and saying, yeah, a lot of it needs to go to pay my mortgage. A lot of it needs to go to deal with the gas bill, the electric bill. I understand that. We all have our overhead. Now, some of that money you need to recognize is going to be used not to buy toothpaste for you. It's going to be used somehow to be leveraged for the kingdom. So that when you get there, you've got people like that guy that's posing today because he was out fishing somewhere with that string of fish. He caught a bunch of fish. When you walk through the gates of the kingdom, who is it that's behind you pointing at you, humanly speaking, saying, I'm here, humanly speaking, because that guy was influential in my life to bring me into the kingdom. You want those people to welcome you into eternal dwellings. If they die before you, you want to see them there saying, hey, glad to see you here. Thanks so much for being an influence in my life and leading me to Christ. That's what you want, that's what I want, and that's the only kind of person that's going to hear from God, well done, good and faithful servant. And the people that hear that are going to look at their life strategically and say, I want to plan for that day. He wants me to think about eternity. That means I got to think about the fact that this life will come to an end. That doesn't feel very good. Now, I know that doesn't feel very good, but you've been influenced by our culture to not expect your preacher on a Sunday morning to get up and talk to you about your demise, but you need to think about that. God would have every godly person consider their end. Every godly person, if you're a Christian and care about church history, there's not a godly, influential person that made an impact on his world that didn't think eternally, that wasn't constantly thinking about, now my life's going to be over soon. I need to think of how I can maximize and leverage my resources for eternity. Throughout church history, you'll find the portraits, paintings that were made of people that were important in church history were usually pictured. You can just follow, search Google paintings of Renaissance paintings of people that made a difference in church history, and you'll find oftentimes there's a skull somewhere in the picture. And that seems odd, but it's there because all of these people were depicted as, look how he constantly thought about the fact that he wouldn't be here for long. Matter of fact, a lot of biblical characters and church history heroes are painted with skulls. Now today a skull is a morbid thing. It's a thing that says I'm cool or I'm mean or be scared of me or pirates, skull and crossbones, we're dangerous. That's not how it was viewed throughout church history. It was viewed as the reminder that we're going to one day be put in the ground and we're going to have our flesh decay and turn to ash, and there will be my cranium sitting there, laying there in a box. I'm temporal. My life is fleeting. To put it in the words of Colossians 3, verses 1 through 5, set your minds on things above. You need to think about that. In the words of Christ, stop focusing so much on storing up treasure on earth. Store up treasure in heaven. You've got to think beyond this life. Now, as uncomfortable as that may be in a modern, sterilized society as ours, I just want to have you think this morning that 100 years from now, you won't be here listening to Mike Fabara's yak from a platform in Orange County about the Bible. No one in this room listening to me right now is going to be listening to me 100 years from now, at least not here, you're not going to be. And you're thinking, hopefully not there. I'll have some better preachers at that point. Okay, I hope so too. But here's the thing. You'll be done with this life, and anything you could have done in this life will be over. There'll be no longer any opportunity to do anything, to leverage any resource, any talent, any situation, or anything in terms of your capital, your cash, your currency. None of that will be useful anymore at all to leverage for the kingdom. You cannot use what you have now then. Your life is passing away. And that should make you think about how can I do something in the short term, strategically planning for long-term goals, and what should your long-term goals be? Well, in this passage, it says that you will have friends welcoming you into eternal dwellings. Now, it's they, right? Look at the last line. I know we're starting backwards. If you saw the worship packet outline and you see, or you downloaded the digital copy of that, it starts with verses 8 and 9. We're working backwards through this text because here we want to start with what the point is, and the point of the parable, according to Jesus, is that I make friends with money so that I can see them in heaven. Now, that concept, I just want you to think about that. When we get to heaven, and of course, we're going to get our bodies back and be put back here on the new earth or inherit the kingdom and be in the kingdom in the intermediate period on earth for 1,000 years. That reality is one that is going to be granted to us only if we're friends first and foremost with God. So I just want to start there. It's about you having a real encounter with biblical repentance and faith. I see my sin for what it is. I turn. I hate the things that I once loved, and I now condemn those things as sin, and I trust Christ for forgiveness, and I'm walking on a new trajectory of righteousness. Yeah, we stumble. Yeah, we sin. I understand that, but I'm on a new path, and it's a different kind of life than I used to live, and I'm invaded by the Spirit of God. He convicts me of my sin. There's a whole new relationship I have with my Creator. That has to be real for you, and if not, then none of this sermon matters. You better be friends with him. And it would be remiss to say, hey, yeah, let's think about making sure we see the people that we work with, interact with, our neighbors. Let's make sure we see some of them in the kingdom of God if you're not going to be in the kingdom of God. We say that a lot, but we're evangelical, right? We're trying to talk about making sure that you're right with God. So I don't make any apologies for that. Starting with myself, right? Just because I'm a preacher doesn't mean I'm a Christian. I better make sure that I'm right with the living God, and I want you to make sure you are too. But beyond that, and more specific to what Jesus is saying, he wants you to make sure that you're not there and the only person in your circle that ends up there. You need to be evangelistic. You need to see people that you know right now and interact with every single day, and you need to see them there. Because you know what? Everything else will not last. Your car won't matter. Your house won't matter. Your job won't matter. Won't matter. What'll matter is people. And you know what? You're right now, every week, interacting with people at your job, in your neighborhoods, your kids, you know, soccer teams, you're interacting with families, all of those people will be somewhere 100 years from now, 10,000 years from now. Those people will be somewhere. But all the other stuff that we're worried about, as Jesus, we run after all these things that the pagans run after. If we're obsessed with that, you're obsessed with the wrong things. Set your mind on things above. And the question is, what are we doing in our everyday lives to make sure that those people that I interact with that are going to be in one place or another are with me, welcoming me into their eternal apartment, saying, hey, come visit me. We're in the kingdom together. What are you doing, in this case, with your money, that small slice of your life? Not so small, it's a big part. It has a lot to do with how we think, our values, but how are you interacting with that money in your life? And we're not talking about giving, we're not talking about church budgets. We're not talking about the offering bag. We're talking about how you use a part of what you have been given, this part called money. Am I leveraging any of that for the kingdom? I'm not talking about giving to missions. I'm not talking about giving to anyone except the people that you care about and you want to see in eternity. Let's get more specific because that does feel a little odd, doesn't it? I mean, it almost feels manipulative. You want me to use money to make friends so that I'll see them in heaven. I'm not saying that. That's what Jesus says right here. Make friends for yourself by means of unrighteous wealth so that when it fails, and it will, and it won't matter anymore 10,000 years from now, but those people will matter and they'll either be in heaven or they'll be in hell. They'll be in the new Jerusalem, or they're going to be in the lake of fire. So do what you can with those resources called money. Why? Because it matters so much to them, and it's amazing what money will do to build a bridge with people. Now, that sounds so weird. If you feel a little icky even hearing that preached from the platform in church, I want to tell you that's the way things are. It's not the way things ought to be. It's the way things are that people will respond to you in a particular way when you are generous to them, as opposed to you being the miserly, stingy, economically frugal person that we tend to be because we want to have more money to spend on ourselves. You need to realize the power of generosity. And let's put it that way as we think through verses 4-7 and work our way backwards through this passage. You need to employ the power of generosity, which is exactly what this steward did. This manager, he employed the power of generosity. He was going to be generous with his master's money and have these people have their bill, in the first case, cut in half. $160,000 of oil. Let's reduce that to $80,000. He uses his master's money to make a friend, knowing that that's a powerful statement to that person. Why? Because that person that owes $160,000 loves his money. And if you can give him $80,000, he'll love you for giving him $80,000. Do you follow that? Simple. The power of money. And when you are generous with your money, that's a powerful statement, and the world takes notice. It's not the way things ought to be. As a matter of fact, you ought to live differently than they live. And this is where this is a nuanced argument, and you need to follow it very carefully. Jot this one down, please. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 6. Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. Now, Proverbs are statements of the way things are. Is that the way things ought to be? No. Here's another one. Second one. Proverbs 18:16. Proverbs 18:16. A man's gifts, his generous gift, makes room for him. It opens doors for him. It gives him a place in a conversation. It gives him access even to people's discussions. And it brings him before the great. Even powerful people will let you have a conversation with them if you've been generous to them. And all we got to do is look back on this political year. And if you follow politics at all and you recognize givings and donations and who's at these banquets and who gets in to have FaceTime with these important politicians, all of that's based on money, people giving. That's how the world works. Now, is that the way you ought to work as a Christian? Of course not. That's why Jesus distances us from this in talking about unrighteous wealth. In other words, for us, it doesn't work that way at all, because as Paul said, if you gave me a little bit or a lot personally, it doesn't matter. The Philippians gave Paul a great gift, and he says, I'm really grateful for the gift, but here's the thing, and it almost sounds like, oh, I was hoping for more from you, because he says, hey, whether I have a little bit or a lot, I've learned the secret of contentment. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Okay. Now, you give money to non-Christians, it's not that way at all. Because to them, the more you give, man, the more interested they are in you. And he says, now that's a great gift and offering to God. But you know, whether you gave me a little bit or a lot doesn't matter. If I have a lot in my bank account, doesn't matter. A little bit doesn't matter. I can learn to do God's will with a lot or a little. And I'm content with that. Or in this case, I just read Proverbs 18:16, a man's gifts makes room for him and brings him before the great. In the church in James, they're condemned for seeing a man walk in with nice jewelry, a nice robe on, and say, oh, you come up here, treat you special. He says, you're making distinctions among yourself based on money, and you shouldn't do that. So that's the very opposite of Proverbs 18:16. Are you following this argument? We're not supposed to live that way. I don't make a distinction whether you have this huge job and you have a lot of money or whether you're here and make minimum wage. It doesn't matter. I should not treat you differently, because that's the Christian way to do it, because to me, the money doesn't matter. To non-Christians, it matters. Why? Because, man, everyone seeks the favor of a generous man in the world. And a gift, man, that'll open up doors for you. And Jesus says, though you're not functioning that way, the world functions that way, and you need to realize how powerful generosity is to them. And I understand it's a sad thing that non-Christians value money as much as they do, but you have some money, and they value that money, and when you're generous to them with that money, guess what? It changes your relationship with that person. And you make friends by means of mammon, by means of, to use the modern translation, unrighteous wealth. So you need to know what your generosity does. Your generosity is a powerful statement. Let me give you four things that it states. Let's start, first of all, what it says to the person you give it to. Four simple statements. I know they're a little bit long, but if you're into note-taking, this might be a good one to remember. Number one, here's what it demonstrates. Generosity demonstrates, here it comes, that you value the recipient more than you do your money. And that's not the way the world works. They value their money more than they value someone they don't know that well. So think about that for a second. When I give generously to someone, they're saying, wow, you value me more than you value what you just gave me, because you just parted with what you gave me. Do you follow that? That's a statement to them. And to put that in a biblical framework, jot down this reference, 1 John 3:16 and 17. 1 John 3:16 and 17, where he defines Jesus' love for us by saying, look, he gave all that he had. To use the words from Corinthians, he became poor so that we might become rich. That's called giving. He lays down his life for us, and then he turns it around and says, you lay down your lives for each other. The next verse says, well, you're not going to die for each other on a cross. We're talking about this, and he goes right to the core of what people want to hang on to, and that is material wealth. And he says, what if you have material things and you see your brother in need? Now, that's a different focus than the one we're dealing with in Luke 16. It is one time to give money when someone is in need, but we're not talking about needs here. We're talking about people that are going to be more friendly to us. They're gonna see that bridge built when I use that money. And it's the same thing, because I'm showing, quote unquote, a concern for them. Love is not a feeling. Love is a commitment to someone's well-being. Love is a commitment to someone's well-being. And when I say, here's some money, here's something valuable, then I'm advancing their well-being, and they're recognizing and reading it as a concern for their well-being above your love for your stuff. Now again, I'm not talking over the top kinds of things. I'm starting with the very basic things of trying to be generous in the most fundamental weekly pedestrian things that we do every week. But let's just start with that observation. Generosity demonstrates that I value the recipient more than I value the money, because I just parted with the money because I gave it to you. Number two, generosity demonstrates that you believe that God was generous to you. Generosity demonstrates that you believe that God was generous to you. Because here's the thing. This particular passage is showing someone being generous with someone else's money. And if you think, well, that makes it a step removed for me because this is my money that you're asking me to be generous to other people with. No. You missed the point. Jesus was very, very shrewd about telling this story, to use a little play on words, because he wants you to recognize you're not the owner. You're the manager. You're the custodian of something that's not yours. And if you sit back right now with so many, you go, oh, Pastor Mike, you don't know me. I mean, I've made all my money the old-fashioned way. I'm very smart. I went to school, graduate school. I'm really smart. Everyone else is sleeping. I'm up. I'm working hard. I get up early. I go to bed late. I made my money. Hey, fool. You don't have any clue what you're talking about. I know people like to think that way because you think you're so smart and you're so industrious and you're so persevering and you're so enduring in your work and you are the hard, industrious worker. You understand you have no capacities to do any of that unless God generously endows you with the means by which to make the money you have. When I said, I'm taking your card, I'm punching it into my computer, and I'm putting it on the screen, and if I look at your balance and all of us would go, woo, baby, look what you got in your debit card. Wow. You know what? None of us should be impressed that that is inherently based on you. All of that comes from God. Your brain, I say it often, if God stepped back from your super intelligent brain that made so much money, it would scramble. It would scramble. You know, if it's your beauty, your brawn, whatever it is, your brain and your face would melt if God were to just for 1 second step back and take back what he gave you. Here's how it's put, if you want a verse to put next to that one. Put 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 and 18. He's calling on people to be generous to others. And here's how he prefaces it. God has been generous to you. And because God has been generous to you, you be quick to be rich in good works and be generous and ready to share. Why? Because you recognize it's a reflection of the God you recognize has been generous to you. And if I'm calling you to step up your generosity right now, this is not about our church budget. It's not about our giving. It's not about our offering bags. It's about you being generous to non-Christians in your life. I'm just here to tell you, the thing you're demonstrating before God who sees you, I hope, is the fact that when you're generous to others, it's not because you're the master, you're the manager. God gave you these things. You can redirect some of that for the sake of eternal benefit. In this case, not for personal advancement, but for the good of those you're being generous to and for the glory of God.
Continuing our series called Money Matters, you're listening to Pastor Mike Fabares, and this is Focal Point. Well, I'm sure we're all feeling compelled to do some hard thinking right now as we consider our budgets and how we might use what God has given us to maximize our impact for God's kingdom. Maybe there's a coworker or neighbor you can reach out to. Take them to lunch or bless them with an unexpected gift. Or maybe there's a friend who's facing an unexpected financial hardship that you can help with. The opportunities are endless. And another way you can show God's love to your neighbors and even people you'll never meet is by supporting this ministry financially. At Focal Point, we're committed to reaching our nation with solid, expository Bible teaching without wavering or watering down God's message. And we do that through the radio, the web, our free mobile app, different podcasting apps such as OnePlace, iTunes, and Spotify, and even Amazon's Alexa. But none of this would be possible without your partnership. So when you give today to help advance that mission, you're really giving to your fellow listeners. It's quick and easy to donate. Just call 888-320-5885, or you can give online at focalpointradio.org. And when you do, we'll say thanks by sending you a fascinating book that's right in line with our study. It's called Managing God's Money by best-selling author Randy Alcorn. Randy gets into the nitty-gritty of financial stewardship, addressing questions about tithing, debt, discretionary spending, and even offering practical tips on teaching stewardship to your kids. You won't want to miss this thorough biblical guide. Request your copy of Managing God's Money when you donate today. Call 888-320-5885 or give online at focalpointradio.org. If you'd rather send your gift in the mail, write to Focal Point, Post Office Box 2850, Laguna Hills, California, 92654. And remember to include a note requesting the book titled Managing God's Money by Randy Alcorn. Well, I'm Dave Drewy, inviting you to join us tomorrow for our weekly edition of Ask Pastor Mike. That's Friday on Focal Point.
Hey there, Pastor Mike here. We're almost out of time, but before we go, I wanted to personally invite you to contact us here. Let us know how we can be praying for you. Head on over to focalpointradio.org and click the contact page, or send me a note on Facebook, facebook.com/Pastor Mike, or twitter.com/Pastor Mike. Can't wait to hear from you.
Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.